coward!" His hands balled into fists. Fuchs advanced to the blanked screen, the image of George's shaggy maned face still burning in his eyes. He had to hit something, anything, had to release this fury somehow, now before it exploded inside him.
"Contact," sang Noden's voice over the intercom. "We have radar contact with a vessel."
Fuchs's head jerked to the speaker built into the bulkhead.
"It appears to be a logistics ship," Noden added.
Fuchs's lips curled into a humorless smile. "I'm coming up to the bridge," he said.
By the time he got to the compact, equipment-crammed bridge, Noden had the approaching logistics ship on the main screen.
Amarjagal was in the pilot's seat, silent and dour as usual. Fuchs stood behind her and focused his attention on the ship.
"What's a logistics ship doing this deep in the belt?" he wondered aloud.
Nodon shifted his big liquid eyes from the screen to Fuchs, then back again.
"Perhaps it is off course," he suggested. "Or a decoy," Fuchs snapped. "Any other ships in sight?"
"No, sir. The nearest object is a minor asteroid, less than 100 meters across."
"Distance?"
400 kilometers.
432 to be precise." "Could it be another ship disguised?"
Amarjagal spoke up.
"There could be a ship behind it, or even sitting on it."
The communication receiver's light began blinking amber.
"They're trying to speak to us," Nodon said, pointing to the light.
"Listen, but don't reply," Fuchs commanded.
"This is the Roebuck," the comm speaker announced.
A man's voice. It sounded a little shaky to Fuchs. He's excited, maybe nervous.
"We have a full cargo of supplies for you. Be willing to accept credit if you don't have hard goods to trade."
"Is Roebuck an HSS vessel?" Fuchs asked Nodon.
His fingers flicked across the keyboard set into the control panel.
"No, sir, it is registered as an independent."
"Are the lasers ready?"
Pointing to the green lights of the weapons board, Nodon replied,
"Yes, sir.
The crews are all in place."
In Roebuck's cargo bay, the team of trained mercenaries was already in their spacesuits and warming up the laser weapons. "Don't open the hatches until I give the word," their captain said from his post on the catwalk that ran around the interior of the spacious bay. "I don't want to give Fuchs any hint that we're ready to fry his ass."
Fuchs rubbed his broad, stubbled chin as he stared at the image of the logistics vessel on the bridge's main screen.
"Why would an independent logistics ship be this deep in the belt?" he repeated. "There aren't any miners or prospectors out here."
"Except us," agreed Amarjagal.
"Fire number one at the cargo bay," Fuchs snapped.
Nodon hesitated for a fraction of a moment.
"Fire it," Fuchs roared.
The first laser blast did little more damage than puncturing the thin skin of Roebuck's cargo bay hull. As the air rushed out of the bay, their space-suited commander gave the order to open the hatches and begin firing back at Nautilus. In the cockpit, Abrams felt cold sweat break out all over his body. "He's shooting at us." Wanmaniji tensed, too.
"We should get into our spacesuits, quickly."
Those were her last words.
His eyes glued to the main screen, Fuchs saw Roebuck's cargo bay hatches open.
"They're firing back," reported Amarjagal, her voice flat and calm.
"All weapons fire," Fuchs said. "Tear her to shreds."
It was a totally unequal battle. Roebuck's laser beams splashed off Nautilus's copper armor shields. Nautilus's 5 laser weapons slashed through Roebuck's thin hull, shredding the cargo bay and crew pod within seconds. Fuchs saw several space-suited figures tumble out of the wreckage.
"Cease firing," he said.
Jabbing a finger at the image of the space-suited people floating helplessly, Nodon asked,
"Shall we pick them up?"
Fuchs sneered at him.
"Do you want to share your rations with them?"
Nodon hesitated, obviously torn.
"And if we take them aboard, what do we do with them? How do we get rid of them? Do you think we can cruise back to Ceres and land them there?"
Nodon shook his head.
Still, he turned back to watch the helpless figures floating amidst the wreckage of what had been a vessel only a few moments earlier. His finger hovered over the communications keyboard.
Don't tap into their frequency, Fuchs commanded. I don't want to hear them begging.
For several moments, Fuchs and his bridge crew watched the figures slowly, silently drifting. They must be screaming for help, Nodan thought, beseeching us for mercy. Yet we will not hear them. At last, Fuchs broke the silence.
1/3 G acceleration, he ordered. Back on our original course. Let's find a real logistics ship and fill up our supplies.
But
they're mercenaries, Fuchs snapped. Hired killers. They came out here to kill us. Now they'll be dead. It's no great loss.
Nodon's face still showed his desolation.
But they'll die. They'll float out there. Forever.
Think of it this way, Fuchs said, his voice iron hard. We've added a few more minor asteroids to the belt.
Selene, Astro Corporation Headquarters. Sabotaged. Pancho knew it was true, even though she did not want to believe it. Doug Stavanger looked grim. He sat tensely before Pancho's desk, wearing light tan slacks and a micro-mesh pullover. Only the slight sparkling in the air around him betrayed the fact that his image was a hologram. Otherwise, he looked as solid and as real as if he were actually in Pancho's office, instead of his own office, up in one of the towers that supported the main plaza's dome. It could have been worse, he said. A solar storm broke out just hours after you were rescued. We had to suspend all surface operations because of the radiation. If it had come a little earlier, you would have fried out there in the cable car. Nobody can predict solar flares that fine, Pancho said. No, I suppose not. But sabotage? She repeated. That's what our investigation showed, Stavanger replied. Whoever did it wasn't even very subtle about it. They used an explosive charge to knock out the trolley's wheels that the cable car rides on. The blast damaged one of the poles, too. Pancho leaned both elbows on her desk. Doug, are you telling me we've got terrorists in Selene now? Stavanger shook his head. I don't believe so. Well, who would want to knock out a cable car? That's the kind of random violence a terrorist would do. Or a nutcase. Or an assassin. Pancho's insides clenched. There it was. The same conclusion her own security people had swiftly come to. Yet she heard herself ask, Assassin? Selene's security investigators think somebody was trying to kill you, Pancho. And 23 other people who happened to be aboard the car, she added silently. Stavanger asked, What do your own security people think? Exactly the same, she replied. I'm not surprised, said Stavanger. Neither am I guess, she said. Then she admitted, I just didn't want to believe that he'd try to kill me. He? Humphreys. Who else? And she remembered their exchange at Humphreys' party. Why don't you retire gracefully, Pancho, and let me take my rightful place as chairman of the Astro Board? In your dreams, Martin. Then I'll just have to find some other way to take control of Astro over my dead body. Remember, you said that, Pancho. I didn't. The son of a bitch, Pancho thought. Stavanger took a deep breath. I don't want you fighting here in Selene. Pancho understood his meaning. If Astro and Humphreys are going to war, let it be out in the belt. Doug, she said earnestly, I don't want a war. I thought we had ended all that 8 years ago. So had I. Some bitch wants control of Astro, and he knows I won't step aside and let him take over. Pancho, said Stavanger wearily, rubbing a hand across his eyes. Humphreys wants control of the belt and all its resources. That seems clear. And if he gets the belt, he'll have control of the whole solar system and everybody in it, including Selene. Pancho nodded, including Selene. I can't allow that to happen.